Youth workers and pastors are busy people. With the pace of life getting faster, we get busier and then have to prioritize the tasks of ministry. Sometimes we let certain tasks slip. In recent years, more and more of us have dropped the important task of study and preparation time. Some have even gone so far as to purchase, download, cut and paste, or even plagiarize talks and sermons prepared by others. This increasingly accepted practice can not only raise ethical concerns, but by moving us out of study and preparation, it can stunt our spiritual growth, lead to passionless teaching, and eventually filter down to stunt the spiritual growth of our kids. Duffy Robbins and I have a spirited and important conversation with our friend Scott Gibson, author of Should We Use Someone Else's Sermon, about these issues and more on this edition of Youth Culture Matters.
From the Center for Parent Youth Understanding, this is Youth Culture Matters. If you're a parent, youth worker, educator, counselor, grandparent, or anyone else who cares about kids, we're glad you've joined us for this practical, informative, and hope-filled podcast. This is a place where together we talk and think Christianly about the rapidly changing world of today's children, teens, and young adults.
Well, I'm sorry to say Jason Soshina can't be with us today. We found out Jason's unable to co-host the podcast. So I actually ran out on the street this morning just a few minutes ago. We pulled somebody in, a co-host. You want to introduce yourself there?
Yeah, my name is Duffy Robbins. and I would really appreciate it if you guys, after this, we could get a free meal.
Okay.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, we'll work. Yeah, and not surprised that you'd work a free meal into that, Duffy. That's kind of, don't you operate that way all the time? Or
all the time.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
As long as the food we eat doesn't end in a vowel. Right?
Yeah, that's right.
Exactly.
Oh, that's another podcast.
I know,
we can't go there.
Given the fact that I'm co-hosting, I noticed you seem to lament Jason's absence a great deal.
Actually, I don't.
We have to do.
I just couldn't think of any other way to start this. I'm just not that creative. So if I can lament his absence and throw you under the bus at the same time.
That's low-hanging fruit.
Yeah. Duffy Robbins is here, and I'm really excited to have Duffy here because we're actually going to interview in a little bit a friend of ours, Scott Gibson, who is a professor of preaching at Gordon-Conwell Theological Seminary. Don't let that scare you off. Scott has written a great book called Should We Use Someone Else's Sermon? Preaching in a Cut-and-Paste World, and we're going to talk about issues of preparation, issues of passion, and we're going to talk about plagiarism, which is a big part of what the book is. So I'm just wondering, Duffy, you know, as someone who speaks a lot and writes a lot, have you ever, you know, been discovered, you know, you've opened up an internet site or a book or you've sat in on someone's talk or sermon and you're going, hey, wait a minute, that's my stuff.
Yeah, and I thought, that's good. I think the most blatant instance was a case of written plagiarism where a guy had taken material almost verbatim out of my book, Building Youth Ministry That Builds Disciples, and had prepared this booklet for his team. And, you know, it was kind of not three ring, but kind of like a binder you do at Staples. And then he showed it to me and said, what do you think of this? I think it's brilliant. Yeah. Like, I'm glad I wrote it, you know, but, I didn't say anything about it. I mean, I didn't push the guy hard or anything, but I did kind of roll my eyes and have a good laugh. But I think at the heart of it is precisely the issue we're talking about today, which is an issue of integrity. Yeah, yeah. But I have to say that at the same time that there have been a number of times, well, I know when I give a talk, if I'm a youth worker and I'm listening, if I have the chance, I'm going to say, hey, this is an illustration I could use. If it's biographical, I can't make it sound like it's
right.
Autobiographical for me. But I go, that is a brilliant illustration. And so the question is, well, is that okay, or is that dishonest, or is that stealing? And when youth workers say, hey, dude, I'm going to use that story, or I just want you to know I've used this story a bunch of times, I say, look, I get it. That's if you can get some mileage out of it. But I do think this question of integrity still plays an important part of this.
Yeah. Chris, you have a story, something you discovered recently, because Chris here scans the internet for us for things, and you actually ran across something. You told me about this after you had dealt with it.
Yeah.
But it was something I had written. Tell the story on that.
You know, I was doing a Google search. Cliff and I come across these things sometimes, and I don't remember. Cliff might have actually been the one who found this one and pointed it my direction. But sometimes we'll just be doing Google searches, and our own material will pop up. And so we clicked on one link, and in fact,
in an odd place.
Yes, it was in fact your material on a resource that we actually sell, and but it was on a church's website, and it was basically a PDF of your exact. The word for word, the exact resource that you put together, and no mention of CPYU or Walt Mueller, anything like that.
The person passed it off as their own,
their
own writing. Yeah,
in their own church newsletter type format.
Yeah,
and no mention of us or anything like that. And so I politely asked them to not do that anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, I had one where a few years ago I was looking for an article I had written around Christmas time. It was actually an article I titled "The Lie of Christmas," not about the deity of Christ, by the way, or the virgin birth, but it was just about how we believe that things will make us happy when we're kids and getting Christmas gifts. Anyways, in my opinion, and I'll say this humbly because I don't write many great things, I thought this was a good one. I'm gonna redo this or use this again. And I couldn't find it on my computer. I couldn't find the file, the word file on my computer. Or at the time, it was probably WordPerfect. So I couldn't find it. And so I figured, I know it's somewhere on our website. I couldn't find it there either. So I just Googled it. And the first, the first link that came up was a link to a church somewhere. And it was, the title. So I thought, oh, wow, somebody put it on their website. And I was quite flattered. And I thought, I'll just go there and cut and paste, bring it back. I'll have the text. And when I went, it was actually in the sermon section of the church website. And it was listed under as the text for the Christmas Eve sermon that was preached. And when I looked at it, the article that I wrote actually started with, you talk about biographical, Duffy, my address when I was a child. Okay, in Pennsylvania, and I remember Christmas at 1162 Beverly Road, Jane up here. And this one said, I remember Christmas at 457 Main Street in Elkhart, Indiana, wherever it was. And I'm thinking, whoa, wait a minute, what is going on here? And I realized that it was all my text. It was word for word, start to finish, with the names and the dates changed and the addresses changed. And I kind of felt a shiver run over me, and I actually emailed the guy and said, hey, this really isn't ethical. He preached my whole article as his story. And he did get back to me about a month later. He was apologetic. He took it down. I didn't threaten any legal action. Of course, I was more concerned about him, and he just said, hey, I'm going through a rough time. I don't have time to prepare. They asked me to preach, so I just pulled this down. There was a lot of explanation and excuse making, but at the same time, that's part of what's behind this. Youth workers have gotten busy with so many other things in life that they're not feeding themselves, and so we find it necessary to, the most important task we have, we're shortchanging ourselves and shortchanging our kids, and that's Christian nurture and discipleship. So, yeah, these things happen. Well, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to have a conversation with Scott Gibson from Gordon-Conwell Theological Seminary about his book, Should We Use Someone Else's Sermon? Or for youth workers, Should We Use Someone Else's Talk? Preaching, speaking in a cut-and-paste world. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. I'm very excited to tell you about a new resource we've just launched here at CPYU. Just Add Parents is a series of ready-to-use parent meetings that feature 3 10-minute video teaching segments, each followed by a time for guided small group discussion. Youth workers, Just Add Parents is perfect for use in your parent meeting or a parent class. The teaching content is not only designed to inform parents regarding pressing cultural issues, but to equip them to respond to these unfolding realities in a gospel-centered, practical manner, all with the goal of helping you help parents lead their children into believing and behaving Christianly in today's rapidly changing culture. Each Just Add Parents Parents Meeting includes video teaching segments, PDFs of discussion questions, and other handouts. You can order Just Add Parents as either a download or on a thumb drive. I'm happy to announce that the first installment in the Just Add Parents Parent Meeting series is now available, and it's titled Tech-Sensible Parenting. If you want to help your parents understand and respond proactively to kids and technology with a Just Add Parents Parent Meeting, you can learn more on our website at cpyu.org. Well, Duffy and I are pretty excited to have a conversation today with an old friend of ours, Scott Gibson. Scott's up at Gordon-Conwell Seminary, where he is the professor of preaching. Or are you one of the professors up there preaching? Or
yes.
How many guys one are of the, or men and women?
Three of us, full-time and an adjunct as well. So yeah.
Okay. And it just so happens that, well, we're excited about this for a number of reasons. We're going to talk about a great topic that needs to be dealt with, but we're going to talk to a friend. And it's a friend who's at a place that's very near and dear to our hearts, because Duffy and I both graduated from Gordon-Conwell, and that place really put a strong stamp on us in terms of shaping our ministries in good ways. All the bad stuff comes from elsewhere, but
right, in good ways.
And not only that, but Duffy and I are able to teach up there. So when we're up on campus, we get to see Scott, because his office is right next to the classroom that we're in constantly. So when he's there, we love seeing him. We bug him. He bugs us. So we're excited.
When he's there.
Yeah. I'm not sure if we should talk about that, because we joke with him about always being on sabbatical, which is kind of funny. It's not true, but we joke with him about that. So. Scott, just a little bit of background on you and your work in preaching and your work at Gordon-Conwell. Just give us, so folks can know a little bit more about you.
Well, I'm originally from Pennsylvania, came to faith through a small country Baptist church. Got interested in preaching when I was in high school because I listened to a lot of hot, sweaty preaching, but nothing that was really all that compelling for me, because it seemed to be the same old thing. But I heard a preacher at a little church in Slippery Rock, Pennsylvania, and that's really the true real name, Slippery Rock. And I heard him preach, but he talked to us and he explained the scripture. It was incredible. And I thought to myself, self, if I ever become a preacher, I want to preach like that man. And and then the Lord led me to seminary, and I developed a real interest in preaching. And did doctoral work on the life and preaching of A.J. Gordon, the founder of the Gordon side of Gordon-Conwell. And then I had the privilege of working for 21 years with one of the star homileticians, preachers of our centuries here, 20th and 21st century, Haddon Robinson. And it was a great run. And we're able to train students, generations of students, to preach clearly and to base what they preach on the scripture. And so that's what I've been doing. I served as a pastor in Pennsylvania before I came up, preached, put it into practice, and then I stepped into the classroom and have been there ever since. It's been a great experience. Yep.
And by the way, I don't know if you remember, but we were at seminary at the same time back in the 1980s. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You probably think about that a lot. Man, I was there with Walt.
I do. And my devotions.
I knew Walt before he became famous.
Before he became Lisa's husband.
Yeah. Well, now, you know, Walt doesn't really have much time for the little people, but it's good that we got this time with you today. It's great.
Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's shift gears here, because I do want to talk out of Duffy's nonsense, but I do want to talk about one specific topic related to preaching. And it just so happens you wrote a book on this, and it's titled Should We Use Someone Else's Sermon? Preaching in a Cut and Paste World. And it's published by Zondervan. We'll include, for people who are listening, we'll include a link to the book so you can learn more about that and know where to get the book. But when I saw the book, I thought, this is brilliant, not just because this is happening in the world of the pulpit in the front of the church, or the stage now, which many people call it, but even more so in our world of youth ministry. Because in the world of youth ministry, we're seeing less and less preparation, ministry preparation on the part of youth workers. In other words, we're finding fewer educating themselves And then also we're finding that due to this maybe lack of education, they're using other people's talks. And this is not even something that people sneak around and do anymore. There are whole websites dedicated to this. And it's certainly a concern, and we want to talk about some of the fallout of that. But you start your book talking about plagiarism, and you tell a couple of stories. Can you share those? Because this is what got you interested in this, I think.
Yeah. When I was a new Christian, don't come from a Christian home, was involved in all kinds of Bible studies, and would be involved in book reading groups as well. And there was a book reading group that I was part of. We read Keith Miller's A Second Touch. And it was really a phenomenal read and a great discussion. And yet, a few Sundays later, we were sitting in the congregation, and we heard the pastor give an illustration that came right out of the book. And he used the illustration as if it was his experience. And I had a friend in the group older than me. He was a father of a couple girls, and he heard that story, and he was so upset. He went to the pastor as we were going out and said to the pastor, "What did you do? This story is right from Keith Miller's book." Well, the pastor was flummoxed. He didn't know what to say. He was but what ended up happening was that our group, our book group, was called before the deacons because we had accused the pastor of doing something wrong. So what happened was that he was the one who transgressed, but the tables were turned, and we were accused of being some who were accusing the pastor of something that he didn't do. I don't know. It was a crazy thing. So there we sat in this linoleumed floor, fluorescent lighted a fellowship hall where there was no fellowship, and we were quizzed about what we did, and we were told that we were wrong for mentioning anything to the pastor. And I thought to myself, what about integrity? Okay. So I was only about a 16-year-old kid, and I didn't know what to make of it, except I knew something wasn't right. The pastor was obviously turning the tables and bearing a falsehood toward us, as he was falsely using an illustration that wasn't his. Fast forward that to several years later, I was serving as an elder at a church, and we were gathered in the room. The pastor wanted to speak to us because he had something to tell us. Got a call, said that there's an emergency elders meeting, please come to the church. The elders were gathered in the room, and the pastor hesitantly said, well, something's come up, and I've got to tell you. Well, what do you think? You think of some type of moral problem, something. Well, what it turned out was that a member of the congregation stopped by to say hello. The pastor had been preaching through a series in Hebrews, and he saw this commentary laying there, and he said, is that a good commentary? And the pastor said, oh, yes, really good commentary. Well, this person who stopped by actually had some theological education, and so he went out and bought the commentary and read it. When he read it, he discovered that the sermons were taken verbatim from this commentary. And so he confronted the pastor very kindly and gently and said, so did you take these sermons from here? And he said, yes, I did. And so he called this emergency elders meeting to confess to the elders what happened. And it was a messy, sloppy, difficult experience for us all. But those two experiences for me set me in a direction to ask, what about this matter of plagiarism? And so in the book, I look at the history of plagiarism, I look at the theological implications and the practical implications of the practice of plagiarism.
Just out of curiosity, are you seeing this, those two stories you told, and I know Duffy and I have, you know, we're aware of things that have happened in our lives where people have taken our things and we've discovered that. But are there a lot of stories you're hearing now? Is it are we concerned less about this now, so the stories are diminishing because we see it as okay, or are you hearing it a lot? You know, what's the mood, the cultural mood on this?
Well, it depends on the church and how they deal with it. But in terms of the overall culture, we're dealing with an internet culture and a Google culture. And so people feel that when it's done, when it's preached, when it's out there, it's everybody's property. And matter of copyright, which is a creation. I understand that it's a creation of our own culture. I think that there's been more of a cottage industry in terms of different websites that promote the use of other people's material, even get money for using other people's material, whether it's and I'm not going to name the websites, but those who are familiar with them know them. Some of them are stated that this is for educational purposes or for help in pastors' preparation, but a lot of folks just completely take everything word for word and preach it. After the book was published, I received emails and phone calls from churches and people about situations in their church. I remember one pastor called me, and he had been fired from his congregation for outright plagiarizing sermons, and he basically wanted me to absolve him. It was the strangest conversation, but basically he wanted me to say that what I had written about these experiences of pastors and the way churches have dealt with them have not necessarily been the best way, and that he really didn't intend to hurt anybody, but he's lazy, and he really didn't want to deal with the task of and responsibility of studying a passage and then applying it to the congregation and people to which he has been assigned by God. And that's the tension, you see. You can have a sermon and think that, well, it's going to apply to everybody in any situation, but you're dealing with specific people, whether it's adults or youth. And to be able to, as Haddon Robinson would say, when the steel of God's word strikes the flint of people's lives, that's when it works, you see. And what happens is that we don't take the responsibility of really working with the text and working with the applying that text to the people to whom we are preaching.
Yeah, so we just forget text and context.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it sounds like your concern, Scott, is not just application, it's also the preparation part of it.
Of course, we have a responsibility. I think that that's one of the things that it's an issue is that people are not prepared educationally to deal with the Bible appropriately, and therefore they use the shortcut to do their work. And
yeah.
They don't want to take the responsibility to say, okay, what I need to do, I need to get training. I need to be properly prepared. Instead, they say, well, you know, I'll just use somebody else's stuff. Of course, they don't have the capacity to discern whether or not it is good or bad. Mm. I know one famous preacher who says, you can use my stuff, it doesn't matter. I wouldn't want to use his stuff because it's not very good. But he gives people permission to use the stuff. But people who often don't have the capacity to discern whether or not it is good biblical interpretation, good biblical application.
Yeah. In the illustration that you began with, and by the way, you actually gave both Walt and myself a copy of the book, I think right after it came out, and I read it immediately because I realized you were trying to send a message to Walt. And I wanted to kind of be a brother with you.
And by the way, I didn't hear the message till you actually, Duffy. I was in church, and you used those first two stories from the book as illustrations with yourself.
Right, right, true. But in that first illustration, you just to be clear, the guy used an illustration that I guess was in Keith Miller's book, and it was an autobiographical illustration.
Right.
So it was like he said, when I grew up on the farm, and then the guy who preached the sermon said, when I grew up on the farm.
Right.
As if he had grown up on a farm, and he actually never grew up on a farm. So
right.
So
right.
So that was the nature of what he did.
That was the nature of it. Yes. Yeah.
But you having read the book, I think you would have also been concerned had he said this guy. Maybe you've heard the story about the guy who grew up on the farm, or
no, I wouldn't have been concerned about that. You know, because he's separating himself from that. He's telling a story that's not. I guess you could define it this way. A.J. Gordon years ago defined it this way. He called it moral plagiarism. Mm-hmm. That is, when you claim something that's happened to you that really didn't happen to you, that's a really moral plagiarism.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So I thought in reading the book that. That though you thought that let's say that book came out of Keith, that illustration came out of Keith Miller's book, that if I were telling that story, I should say, I found a great story about this from a book by Keith Miller, and then tell the story. So the first offense would have been if I acted like it was my life autobiographically, right. But the second offense, which I think is easier, frankly, a little bit easier to go. Both are easy to commit, but would be to go, look, I'm going to tell the story that I, and I'm going to tell it not as if it's autobiographical, but I'm not going to take the time to credit it, to attribute it to, you know, Keith Miller or whoever wrote a particular book. That am I right that you kind of had some questions about that as well?
Well, I don't want to make a sermon get clunky with footnotes, but you could say Keith Miller tells a story about, or there's a story that I read about, you know, just to separate yourself from it. It doesn't mean that the story's not going to have the kind of impact that you want it to have. Yeah.
Right.
So this is really multi-layered because, Scott, you're talking about the issue of lack of preparation. You're talking about the issue of lack of discernment. In terms of, you know, whether or not this is good biblical exegesis, you're talking about a lack of ability to preach a text faithfully to a context. You're talking about, the one big thing, I mean, those are all, passion. That's another one. I'll throw that in. You're talking about passion. But ultimately, then we get to the issue of integrity. And when someone just has the wherewithal to, in a very gutsy way, just say, I don't see anything wrong with this. That really, I mean, all those other areas concern us deeply, but that ultimately, that's where I'm going, are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. You know, do you see all those, I mean, are there any other layers we're missing here? Oh,
yes. Yeah, those layers. And then if somebody might say there's a legal layer too, as well. But certainly, those are the different textures of this problem, and it is multi-textured.
Yeah.
Hey.
Go ahead, Doug.
Can I just one of the things that intrigued me in the book, I really love that I was, because I speak a lot, it was interesting, it was challenging, but it was also really informative. For example, I was intrigued about how, just. Like Walt's response just now is like, how could you think of this? But then there are actually in the book you take pains to document people. I think Spurgeon was one of the voices. Augustine, how they said, well, you know what? If you can't feed your people better than someone else can feed your people, then, you know, these guys are that are respected theologians and pastors are saying, in essence, the ultimate goal here is your people need to get fed the best they can get fed. Could you talk a little bit about, just to kind of take a weird switch, but what are some of the arguments in favor of this practice that, and not just, I mean, obviously it's expedient, it's easy. But like Augustine and those guys, why did they not act, you know, with obvious outrage like Walt just now. I mean, almost on the verge of really losing control.
Yeah. If you didn't get Duffy's question, let me translate. What justifies lying?
Certainly is an integrity.
Trying
issue.
To walk the line here. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, for some of the early church and other portions of church history where pastoral training was absent or minimal, you have these folks who were leading lights and they were trying to train people. And one of the ways in which they trained folks was to say, okay, use my sermon as an example, basically, to show you how to do sermons. But the idea wasn't that's the steady diet from which you would feed your people. It's helping to train them to move from that which they don't know to what they can become more familiar to, they can be walking on their own in terms of theological training. There's a fine line there too between training and hubris. That is, if you really think I've got the corner on this, so just preach my sermons. And there are pastors, leading pastors, who would say that, just preach my sermons. And my question is, are you talking about training people on how to learn how to preach sermons on their own? Or are you just saying, I have it all together, you don't need anybody else's help? There's that dimension that really concerns me. Luther told his underlings, preach my sermons, but it wasn't that he was trying to market himself. See, and that's the thing that people are marketing themselves and getting the most distribution of their brand out there. That's a real problem, and it's something that has a lot to do with character.
And sometimes money's involved in that. So,
Yeah, one of the examples that I give in the book is during the Middle Ages, there was a book that was published called Sleep Well Sermons, and they were basically, this book was sold as almost an underground black market type of book for pastors to buy, and they could sleep well on Saturday night because they had a sermon that they could preach on Sunday morning, but they had put no effort into putting it together at all.
That's called, that book's called Hot Talks now. It's called Hot Talks.
But the sleep well is actually to the audience.
Yeah.
just to push this a little further, in the book, it sounded like, for example, when the sleep well book was published, that it was just routinely that a lot of pastors just said, of course, this is what you do, and that it seemed at one time, at least, if I read the book right, that it was kind of an accepted practice.
Yes, it was. Yeah, it was an accepted practice,
but still not a good one.
Yeah, this is not a new issue. This is an issue that has gone on for millennia. It's an issue that keeps popping up, but the way in which it's dealt with, the way in which the issue comes to light, can be very shocking for a congregation, and the issue of trust is evaporated.
Yeah,
and that's why you see a lot of churches firing pastors, because they feel that they've been misled, and they're trusting the pastor is doing his or her work. They're paying that person to do that, and yet the person downloads things from the internet and really doesn't put the time in. So they ask the question, well, what's the person doing with his or her time?
Hmm. Hey, before we take a break here, I want to say one thing, and that is that I think Duffy and I would both say that it's really important for youth workers and pastors as well, because the two of us do this, to listen to good preaching and good sermons. So as part of your preparation, because you not only learn how to preach, you're exposed to good biblical exegesis, you're seeing how people preach in context, And I'll just give an example. I'm working on some new seminar material on the issue of anxiety. And I'm not just sitting developing thoughts on anxiety, because that would make me quite anxious, but I'm listening to what the research is saying, what the theory is saying, what the scriptures say about it. I've gone to some of my favorite preachers. So for an example, you know, how does Tim Keller address anxiety? And so I see how he addresses it, and I've learned some great things from it, you know, which I will pass on, and I will give credit where credit's due. But we would not say don't listen. So we need to do that. Well, we're talking to Scott Gibson, and it's about preaching, preparing talks, preparing sermons, and the kind of preparation we need to have. He's written a book called Should We Use Someone Else's Sermon? And we'll be back right after the break. Stick with us. Are you interested in bringing CPYU to your church, school, or community? A big part of our ministry is the on-site seminars we conduct in dozens of settings every year. CPYU seminars are designed to encourage and educate your audience on a variety of youth culture issues. Every seminar is designed to be informative, practical, and hope-filled. If you want to learn more about our CPYU seminars, available speakers, and the many seminar topics and options in our growing seminar lineup, go to our CPYU homepage at cpyu.org. Click on the seminar option on the menu bar at the top of the page, and you can learn more about how to schedule a CPYU speaker and seminar for your parents, youth workers, and educators. Well, Scott, we do a little thing with our guests from time to time called Take Five, where we very unfairly put you on the spot and fire five questions that you have to answer off the top of your head. Quick answers, and it's a way just for people to get to know you. So are you willing to do this? And let me just say the answer is yes. So either way, you've got to do it, even if you say no. So here we go. I just came up. Two of them relate to your personal life. And then three, I don't know, it just sounds funny saying that. And then three relate to preaching, because I think this is good. It'd be really helpful. I'm intrigued by, you know, your whole approach to this and your bank of knowledge. So first one is, and we know your wife, Rhonda. She's a director of alumni relations, right, up there at Gordon College.
Yes.
Is that her title? Okay. And we get emails from her. She keeps us up to date on what's happening there. What is, first question, what's the last film that you viewed with Rhonda? Last film you two saw together? Either TV, Netflix, computer, theater? Oh, he's really
yeah.
reaching here.
He's filtering.
Well, I think it was, it's the one with Meryl Streep, Flores Foster Jenkins. We downloaded it, and it's about a crazy socialite who wanted to be an opera singer, and she wasn't a very good opera singer, and paid people to come and hear her sing.
Good film. Do you recommend it?
Yeah, it's excellent. Meryl Streep is phenomenal.
Yeah, you like her as an actress. Okay, second question. Sports team that you live and die with?
Oh, boy. I moved here from the Pittsburgh area, so I'm always a Steelers fan, and also a Patriots fan because I live in New England. So
yeah, is it difficult for you to write a book about integrity?
All right, I'll say Red Sox.
He's working on another one. Yeah,
like
yeah. Yeah, what you got to understand is Duffy and I are both diehard Philadelphia fans, so there's a lot of bitterness in our lives, but we've learned to deal with it just by low blows to other fans and other people. So, yeah.
Her names are Mara.
Yeah. All right, here we go. Recommend, what would you say is your best source or is a best source of sermon illustrations?
I think the best source for most preachers and for me is my life. If you're able to be self-reflective and understand from an analytical and reflective and applicational perspective yourself, and not to say you're promoting yourself, but the angles in which you look at life, the questions that you raise, those kinds of things are the same kinds of questions that your listeners may have.
Yeah. So question 3B would be, that was 3A. 3B would be, have you ever been tempted to build a sermon around a good illustration?
I've used illustrations to be, in a sense, a central place, because the passage itself might provide an illustration. You think of like Psalm 131, where David crawls into the lap. He says, I find my rest in the lap of God. And that, so that's a dominant image. And there are images like that that can be punctuated throughout a sermon like that. But the passage itself often give you a great image.
Yeah. You actually took that question more seriously than I thought you would. I thought you'd give it a little chuckle and let us know that, you know, you're crazy. You didn't listen in your preaching class. Okay. All right. I've got two more questions for you. A preacher, a living preacher, who you love to listen to. I want a good recommendation for who to listen to. A living preacher right now.
A living
preacher. Yeah, because we've got the internet. We can track with people. Yeah. And do you have someone that you just would say to your students, hey, this is someone you need to listen to?
You know, I listen to some of my graduates, some of my students. And I listen to a fellow by the name of Nick Gatsky. He's at a church in Ohio. Cult of personality type of culture in evangelicalism. But I like to listen to pastors in smaller churches that are doing. Nick is one I like to listen to. I like to listen to Eric Dawkin is his name. He pastors a church here in Marblehead, Massachusetts.
Lucky guy.
Yeah. So I like to listen to folks who are not the premier people, because they get enough attention, and some of them do an okay job and others don't.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Last question.
And Duffy, I love listening to Duffy.
I knew that was going to come
up.
Yeah.
I was waiting.
Duffy's head just went out both sides, top and bottom of the screen right there when you said that. So, last question. How about a preacher who is dead, who you love to listen to or read, and you recommend that to your students?
Yeah, well, my mentor, Haddon Robinson.
Who just died recently.
And if you could listen to his sermons, you will be instructed and blessed.
Good.
That's true.
Thanks for being a good sport in doing that. Okay, Duff, during the break, you had a thought, and I thought it'd be worthwhile for you to pass that on here's comment.
Well, just in listening to you, Scott, it just seems like that there are two serious issues at the root of this. And one is, and you said this, a lack of theological training that we in youth ministry really need to be theologians. We need to take seriously study the word, because that's going to provide the soil out of which good sermons and Bible studies can grow. And then the other element of that is that we are also, all of us, feeling the pressure to become less to become pastors and more to become program directors. And if I'm a youth pastor today, I've got so many, I mean, just trying to keep up my website, try to make sure our social media presence. I remember hearing Andy Stanley say at a youth specialties convention, you're going to have to cheat somebody. You can't do it all. You cannot do it all. And I think he's right. You can't do it all. Now, his thing was, don't cheat your family. But somewhere along the line, I think youth workers understandably are going, you know, I've got to find a space. And it's because of the pressure that we feel to be program directors. That seems to me to be the two core issues that feed this thing, animate this problem.
Yeah. You're exactly right. The lack of theological training and the demands of whatever ministry you're in and the pull that they have. But there's one more I'll add to that. And that is, most people only see the end result. That is, they see you standing in front of people and they think, wow, I want to do that, or that's all I need to get ready for. So it becomes more of a presentation orientation, like I'm a communicator. But communicators, preachers, youth workers have to have some type of foundation from which to draw what they have to say. If you don't have that, then you are addicted to going to other sources, because you don't have anything from which to draw. And that's why theological education is so key. And I'm not here to promote Gordon Conwell. I'm here to promote any kind of theological education that you can get, not just listening for free from some internet site, but really investing yourself in what it means to think about the Bible and to study the Bible, so that you can bring something to your kids. It's not that you are 12 layers below the pastor. You are teaching and leading people, and you have the responsibility. And the scriptures say, as teachers, doesn't say just pastors or whatever. As teachers, and you are a teacher, we're going to be judged more strictly than anybody else. And so it is something that we want to take seriously. It's not just seeing the end product. It's being able to have a foundation on which to provide a good, nourishing end product.
Is it fair?
Yeah, I think that's a good insight.
Yeah, it is. And thanks for asking that, Duffy. Maybe this is unfair, but is there a good resource or block of resources that you could point to as someone on a seminary faculty where if you've got a person who can't go to seminary, here's the kinds of things you need to be reading and working through in terms of self-educating theologically?
Yeah, well, you need to read good theology, Miller, Erickson, and these are not easy reads. Nothing that's worth doing is going to be easy, and that's why study to show yourself approved of God, and that's understanding the scriptures and being able to look at sources like a simple book, but it's a good book, is How to Read the Bible for All It's Worth by Doug Stewart, and also
Gordon Fee.
Yeah, that's a great book.
That's a great book. But again, these are just crutches in a sense that will help, but you really need a solid foundation to give to your kids so that they are going to be solid. That's what you want. You want them to be solid too. And so I beg people, please get the kind of training you need. It's not just something that you're going to be able to pick up online or on the internet, but it's going to be getting the kind of training to really wrestle with the scripture so you can apply that Bible to people's lives. And these shortcuts of plagiarism aren't going to be the kinds of things that you really, really need. You really need, and your kids really need, good, solid biblical theological training.
That's good. Hey, I know your time's at a premium. I think you're scheduled to sit in on a plagiarism trial here shortly. So, no, I know your time's at a premium.
That reminds me, I've got to get off the line.
Yeah. Yeah, Duffy's got to go wash his face and get ready, get his notes ready. Hey, but here's what I want to end with, Scott. You've got an audience of youth workers. We have pastors listening. Best practices. What would you say to the people in the world that Duffy and I inhabit that they're speaking to kids week in, week out? Give us just a handful of best practices where they can really take steps forward in this and deliver the goods.
The first thing I would say is that you want to look at your ministry that is God's ministry that He's given to you, and that it is a ministry of discipleship. That is one of the paradigms that we have really lost in the church, and it is a discipleship ministry. We're moving people towards maturity. And so the question is not only are you to do biblical exegesis, that is good, solid biblical study, but also youth group exegesis or congregational exegesis, that is understanding where they are. In another book I've done called Planning Your Preaching, Planning Your Preaching, I talk about the way in which every church is different. It could be an infant church or it could be a more mature church. And you got to figure out where the people are spiritually so you can direct what you're speaking on to them at where they are so that you can move them to more maturity in Christ. And so it's having that ability then to understand where the kids are and then addressing where they are and saying, okay, I want them to move to the next level of spiritual maturity. They're not going to be a middle-aged adult spiritually, but I know as a pastor, I had people who were chronologically 83 years old, but they were basically 5 years old spiritually. And so that can happen with kids. It can happen with young adults or older adults. So the question is how can you move them? And so if you understand the scripture, you're going to be able then to say, okay, this is where we can start. They are in need of basic understanding of who Jesus is. So what I'm going to do then is I'm going to plan talks that tell people who Jesus is. And or they're dealing with some issues that are challenging to their life, maybe sexual issues. So I'm going to deal with Paul's discussion of sexual issues in his letter to the Corinthians, and help him to move them towards more maturity in Christ. Mm. So it's understanding the scriptures, but also understanding where the kids are, so that you can help them move towards maturity. Yeah. And there are kids that are more spiritually mature than some of the people I've had who were more chronologically older in the churches that I've had, because they've been discipled, shown what it means to become more and more like Christ.
Mm. That's good.
Scott, is there a place? I don't know. I don't know how much time we have left, but is there a place? How can a youth worker, to go back to Walt's question, how could or should a youth worker use a downloaded sermon? I mean, obviously, we made the case you don't read it from scratch, just reheat right. it and serve it. But could that be a part of the preparation regimen, or is that just too risky?
Well, I listen to sermons and I benefit from them. I listen to them more not for their content, but for the way in which it can shape me spiritually. A lot of folks, though, they're looking at listening to a sermon in order to find out content so that they can skip all the steps that the preacher went through, hopefully, to make that sermon work. And that's, I think, the tension. You know, what can you learn from it? But you know, this is how the person shapes a sermon. This is how a person raises questions in the introduction in order to draw the listeners in, those kinds of things. But it's that kind of approach, I think, we want to ask ourselves. What's the approach we're taking as we listen to a sermon?
Yeah, good question. Yeah. You know, we're going to have to bring this to a close. And Scott, I really appreciate your passion. Duffy and I get to see you because we're visually connected here on our laptops as we do this interview. And I think one of the things I love when I'm watching you, and I see you in person, you know, when you're on campus and not on sabbatical, is your energy and your passion over this. And what struck me as I'm watching you and seeing your excitement through your body language and your face is that when we study, this fills our well, and we teach and preach out of our passion. And I think we're losing that. We're shortchanging our teenagers. We're shortchanging their parents. We're not facilitating spiritual nurture when we don't feed our own soul. And that's what I hear you saying. And if we're feeding our soul, there's such a wealth of stuff that will come out of that. Why do we need to plagiarize? So, you know, I really appreciate you for this. Duffy, any last words you want to share?
Well, I would just say, if you're listening to this and you're a youth worker and you're going, oh my gosh, I mean, I don't know how I'm going to fit this in. And Scott, feel free to interrupt, but I would say, okay, all right, why don't you try this, just to start with this. Commit yourself to reading at least 5 commentaries to study the passage for yourself. Maybe it's 2 hours, maybe it's 3 hours or what. But before you ever hear ever read anybody's message on the text, see if God has a message he wants you to hear in the text and to deliver from the text to your particular context. At least start there. Start there. And you might find over time that I guess God does have something to say through me and to me.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And writing the questions down that you might have about that text might be the same kind of questions that the kids and your listeners might have as well.
Oh, this is good. I'm thinking about when I was growing up, you know, my dad was a pastor, and every Thursday morning he would lock down in his study to work on his sermon, and he would tell his secretary, no interruptions unless it's somebody from my family. And rarely did we interrupt him because we were such good kids. But what really struck me about that is there was a pastor's study, and I would encourage youth workers, have a study time, a study place, feed your soul. Scott Gibson, thanks so much for
being with us. Great to be with you.
Yeah. Good to see you, man.
Yeah.
Good to see you, folks. Thanks so much.
Yeah.
Thanks, everybody.
And just a reminder to everybody, we'll put all the links up, and you'll get to see this on cpyu.org on the podcast page.
And we look forward to talking to you next time on the next episode of Youth Culture Matters.
Thanks for joining us for Youth Culture Matters, a podcast from the Center for Parent Youth Understanding. If you'd like to learn more about today's youth culture, visit our website at cpyu.org. And if you have any questions, comments, or feedback, email us at podcast@cpyu.org.